Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And I wonder, is this the first podcast we've done when we are all at remote locations away from home?
Ooh, maybe. It may well be, actually. It may well be.
Well, I am in a central London location. I don't want to say where, just, you know, paparazzi and all that. Just need to...
Penthouse. Yeah, but they can't scale massive, like, 20-story buildings to your penthouse, so can they? Helicopters, I guess.
Exactly. Where are you, Phil?
I'm in Bethgelert, or Bedgelert, in North Wales.
Lovely.
Well, is Bethgelert named Bethgelert because of a dog?
It is, yeah. It's quite a interesting story. So Gellert's grave, so Bedgelert is grave of Gellert. The dog was called Gellert. Gellert's grave is just outside the centre of the village. And it's a bit like a Lady and the Tramp story where I think it's Prince Llewellyn, this is medieval Wales, came home.
So what, a couple of years back, yeah? Whee!
Like 5 years ago. Came home to find his baby and his dog Gellert covered in blood. And he immediately took Gellert outside and killed Gellert, went back inside and found that the baby was actually fine, but there was a dead wolf in the baby's room. And so Gellert had slain a wolf and been killed by Prince Llewellyn as a consequence.
Wow.
That's a cool story. And JB, where are you?
That's a great question. I don't even know. My brother's fiance works for a large sort of hospitality company, and they've booked some lodges in a Yorkshire golf club somewhere. So I'm just here. I don't know what it's called. Darwin Escapes is what's on the menu, so that's where I am.
Great. Yeah. Lovely job.
Very nice though. Beautiful views.
Well, I'm glad we're doing the podcast now and we didn't just put it all into Sunday because we've had news today. So what do you make of the citing panel finding there was something to be cited, but something that no one knew anything about during the game and nothing else? Carl Sinclair, an alleged bite on the arm of Franco Mostert, and the citing panel deemed that there was nothing else to investigate.
Rugby can't win, can it? You know, when we have all the sightings, people whinge. When we have no sightings, people whinge. I'm not really bothered. I didn't see any bites, though. I mean, biting is serious. That is the sort of thing that should be cited.
Yeah, it definitely should be cited. I mean, we did... There was accusations of another bite, not this one, which was Hogg on Willie LaRue. But this one, from the angles that I've seen, it's definitely unclear. Now, I do know the sighting... officer has more angles available to him than we have because of TV image rights, but it's not the one I was expecting. A sighting can happen for anything that is deemed a red card offence that was not given as a red card in the game. And there could have been, I don't know, two or three of those coming out, not this one from the ones that I was expecting.
Yeah, completely agree. Can I just stop the biting a second? Has Sinclair done this before? It seems to ring a bell.
I don't know if he's done this before. He's certainly lost his head a few times before, hasn't he? But actually, that's one thing. Well, we'll wait and see what the citing panel find and if Carl Sinclair pleads guilty or not guilty to it. I gather what happened is during the game, so Franco Mostert kind of grabs Kyle Sinclair around the head at the bottom of a ruck tackle scenario, and Franco Mostert went over to Ben O'Keefe, the ref, and said, "Look at my arm." Apparently, there may have been bite marks. I don't know. There may not have been. And the referee at the time said, "Sorry, I didn't see it. I can't look into that now." And so I think it might have gone in the referee's report, and that's why it's been cited.
I see.
Okay.
Now, here's another question for you. Is it ever okay to bite? How say you, Tim Cocker?
In self-defense, absolutely. Are you talking on a rugby field or generally?
On a rugby field.
On a rugby field. If
in general.
If someone was, if she really wants it, no. If someone was pinning me and gouging me, I do anything. You can grab bollocks.
Yeah.
You can bite. You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And also, I think if fingers get in your mouth somehow, you kind of know, don't you, if someone's up to no good, fish hooking or whatnot, I think you're okay to bite. Other than that, it's absolutely unacceptable.
100%.
Yeah, I would agree. Fish hooking or gouging seems the only time. Even if someone's got you in a headlock or like biting seems a bit too far.
Unless they're about to choke you out.
Yeah. Possibly in that scenario as well.
Yeah. You know the scenarios. It would have to be something pretty extreme.
Extreme, yeah. I don't think, JT, your point, I don't think, I've just done a very quick Google, I don't think Sinclair's had a biting incident previously. Obviously, we know he has had a bit of a short fuse at times in the past, but I don't think he's ever had any biting allegations.
Yeah, it'll be one to watch. We'll let the sighting panel do what they do. I guess it might come down to what evidence there might have been at the time, because I can't imagine they're going to be able to prove or disprove it from the camera footage. So it might come down to the evidence at the time and the evidence from the two players. So we'll see what Carl Sinclair says. I think you're right, Phil, to point out there could have been several. Maro Itoje, in South Africa, they were getting very hot under the collar about him kneeing on Franco Mostert. There was Cheslin Kolbe on two occasions, Faf de Klerk and Mako Vinopola. Could have had something to answer for as well.
Now,
I'd be interested to know, Phil. Well, I do know because I spoke to you at length about it over and over again, probably repeated times in the wedding. But, however, what was your view on the game on Saturday? And what is your view in general on the heat in the build-up?
So the heat, two separate things, the heat in the build-up and then the game. So Razzy Erasmus's 62-minute long monologue, diatribe, whatever you want to call it, was absolutely astonishing, like unbelievable. I could not believe what I was watching when I was going through that. The way the detail he went to effectively question the integrity. He did repeatedly question the integrity of Nick Berry during the first test, and he was quite clever, quite careful not to purport the reasons why Nick Berry's might not have been impartial, but he just repeatedly questioned his integrity for such a sustained period of time over some others, which were just like it was just totally hypocritical to point some things out and ignore lots and lots of other things. So yeah, that was absolutely astonishing. And to do so, he is obviously in the role of director of rugby for South Africa. He's wearing his South Africa, I think it was a shirt and hat, wasn't it? A t-shirt, polo
tracksuit, top, hat, mug.
Yeah, he said explicitly at the start of the video that he's doing it in a personal capacity and not on behalf of South Africa rugby. However, Jacques Nienaber said in his pre-match interview that the South African coaches and Razzy Erasmus discussed that what they were going to do before he did it and agreed that that was the right way of doing things, which is Just a crazy thing to think that that would be the right thing to do. And obviously, that is on top of him having the Jaco Johan, or whatever it was, what was his burner account was called, feeding clips to Razzie to retweet for two consecutive weeks after the Springbok A game and the main game. The whole thing was just ludicrous. But it led to, I actually think it probably benefited South Africa, at least to some degree. It led to a big South Africa victory. So it's one of those where if South Africa lose that game, he looks completely crazy, completely, totally out of touch. Like he's lost the plot. South Africa win that game and the story moves from Razzie's outburst onto the South Africa performance and how they totally shut down the Lions. And I think there were some poor refereeing decisions that we'll come on to with the Ches and Colby one, because Ches and Colby two, actually, because I think they were probably the worst ones on the day. And South Africa got the rub of the green on a few other occasions. But I think overall, South Africa were by far the better team, and they just totally shut down the Lions from playing, stopped them from doing, well, anything at all. I mean, you will have seen the stat that Dan Biggar passed the ball three times during the game. And
what a waste of amazing. What a waste of three opportunities to kick possession away.
Credit has to go to South Africa for the way they did it, but the Lions should be kicking themselves, because they just played in South Africa's hands. They kicked all their possession away. They allowed the game to be slowed down so that South Africa could continue for it to be an arm wrestle and a power game for their forwards instead of speeding everything up. It was brilliant from South Africa, but dull from the Lions.
Some of the other stats. So since Opta began recording data, that was the Lions had the lowest average meters per carry ever in a test match.
Wow.
1.24 meters per carry.
Yeah, and it looked like it as well.
Yeah. They carried for in that test match half as much as the next lowest Lions match in the last sort of four tours.
Astounding. Wow. Absolutely astounding.
Yeah. The Lions played into South Africa's hands in a huge degree with and you've just mentioned it there, to the kicking of the Dan Biggar had multiple times where there was good front football attacking platform with world-class backs outside him, and just he put multiple bombs up and a couple of crossfield kicks that the South African back three handled relatively easily. Conversely, when the South Africa were kicking on Hogg, Watson and Duan, again, the Lions did not look comfortable, confident or assured under the high ball.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those weaknesses have been magnified like just a couple of days out when you have time to reflect on it and look at the game again. Because obviously when I watched the first time, I was a little bit hazy with drink and then I was a bit hungover. I've seen it subsequent and I completely agree with all of that.
Do you not think that there is a danger, just as I think we were quite good at this last week, at saying, hold on, the Lions had a really good second half, but South Africa, a couple of things tweaked ever so slightly and South Africa win that game. And absolutely. It was a beatdown in the second half, don't get me wrong, but it was all things compounding on each other. The penalty count South Africa got on the better side of, because their defence was so oppressive, because they put so much pressure on the line out and the scrum, and the exact reverse of what happened last week. So I don't think you need to, and this is what I think a lot of people are doing since the game, is throwing the baby out with the bathwater and saying it needs a total revolution. You need Finn Russell in at 10 and Marcus Smith, get them all in. And I don't think it's quite as drastic as that. I do, however, think on reflection, the Lions got lucky in week one and faced a South African team that got caught a bit cold. And actually, South Africa are only going to get better. And if you try and do what the Lions have been trying to do, they're going to get battered.
But the Lions will get better too. Lions are usually very good by the third test. It's the first two tests that they usually come in a bit, you know, not quite where they should be.
Yeah, I suppose so. They battered Australia, didn't they? And then they got the draw against New Zealand.
Yeah.
Did they get a draw in the last game? Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was draw in the last game, wasn't it?
Thanks to Romain Poit.
Wow. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Tim. First test was all about tiny margins. I think this one was about tiny margins, but all the tiny margins went to South Africa.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I was trying to think of an analogy for where the Lions went wrong. Because one thing we have seen, the South Africans, they're a very big team, and their conditioning right now is probably not where it needs to be. Which is one of the reasons why we saw them trying to slow it down and the Lions playing into their hands. And one of the reasons why we saw the 60-odd minute first half. And it was the analogy I was thinking about was imagine a 100 meter runner and an 800 meter runner. They've both got to run 800 meters. Who wins that race? It's the 800 meter runner. But if the 800 meter runner allows the 100 meter runner to sprint 100 meters, then have a 5 minute rest, then sprint another 100 meters, so you stop the clock every 100 meters, the 100 meter runner is going to absolutely destroy the 800 meter runner over that distance. And that was exactly what the Lions allowed South Africa to do by just continuing. And part of it was the referee and the referees over analyzing any decision against South Africa. Allowed it to be slower, and South Africa were very cute and clever about slowing things down, but the Lions just played into their hands by kicking away possession and just allowing the South Africans to calmly control the game and control the clock. It was crazy.
Yeah, the clock control is one thing. Tim, I think one area that South Africa didn't get the rub of the green was the actual physicality and the intimidation game on the Lions. I was very impressed by the way that they stood up to everything.
Yeah, and you actually saw, when I was watching it again, the first time there were some handbags, which I quite enjoyed. In the stadium, I don't know if you noticed it, they were playing a...
boxing bell.
Yeah, a boxing bell, yeah. Every Love time it. There was handbags.
Hang on, we're not meant to celebrate this sort of behaviour. Are we meant to be appalled?
Well, that would have been awesome if it was a full stadium. It would have been amazing. Yeah. But the very first incident, so 2 minutes into the game, Makovunipola lying on the wrong side, penalty to South Africa on the halfway line. They kick for the corner, and it's a rolling maul that it's actually called a breakaway maul and a tackle that goes down. So it's a scrum. And Mapimpi comes in from the left wing, and he doesn't really do anything as far as I can see. And Alan Wynne-Jones just comes up and like starts pushing and shoving to signal that obviously you can't come in to a ruck when you're on the wing, but also to signal exactly, JB, as you're just saying, that intent of the physicality. So he, Alan Wynne, or as Razia Erasmus called him, repeatedly called him Alwyn Jones. He set the tone, and that's a demonstration of leadership. Now, unfortunately, it didn't all work out, and certainly towards the end, the South African physicality and physicality around the ruck just got the better of the Lions.
Completely agree. I was going to move this conversation on to something else. Oh, no, actually, I will just say one more thing on the game, unless anyone's got anything else to add, which is I don't understand the juxtaposition which is in the press today about how good the game was, but how low the game had sunk in order to get to that point. Owen Slot was talking about it in the Times, and Owen Slot's a man with impeccable judgment as far as I'm concerned. But I can't get on board with the hand-wringing around last week's events. Personally, I loved it.
I think you drew a good distinction on the previous podcast, JB, where you said you're all for talking smack about your opposition, just don't mention the referee. And I think just on reflection, looking back at the game, I think Phil's right that they deliberated over decisions and then seemed to err on the side of caution. At least they seemed to do that across the board, because Makovunipola stayed on the pitch. Cheslin Kolbe didn't get a red card. So at least you could argue that with two twice. Yeah. You could argue there was an element of consistency, but we will never know what Ben O'Keefe would have done and how that officiating team would have behaved had Razzy Erasmus not did what he did. Now, interestingly, this evening, World Rugby have said they are conducting a investigation into the conduct of South Africa, and they're looking at their general code of conduct and if that needs to be changed as well. So proceedings have started.
Yes. And that is, I'm quite glad to hear that, actually, because the phrase you say there, just don't attack the officials. And the way that Razzy Erasmus repeatedly, over 62 minutes, attacked Nick Berry's judgment, character, impartiality is just, it's not a good look for the game. And it's also the fact that, so he was clearly questioning his impartiality, but also he was effectively highlighting something that we all know is a problem and risk in the game repeatedly, and obviously only in one direction. And that's the fact that rugby is an incredibly complicated and messy game. If you have, this is something we said many, many times, but if you freeze framed any ruck, maul or scrum when there are, well, scrum, 16 different players involved, a ruck or maul anywhere from two up to 10 plus, there will be probably multiple infringements from multiple different players, and you can pick and choose which ones you want to see. And that is something that is never going to be taken out of the game. Like, you're never going to find a solution to that. So highlighting it in one direction, the way that Razzy Erasmus done it, is basically questioning the integrity or even the ability of the game to be refereed, which makes it such a ludicrous statement to make.
Yeah. Yeah, I can go with that.
And I'll just add to that. So doing the talk sports stuff, there's been the media day today, and fair play.
What's this?
And fair play to Nick Heath. So there was the South African press conference. Nick Heath was asking the questions for us, and at one point the assistant coach Dion, I can't remember his name. Anyway, one of the assistant coaches said, oh, we respect the World Rugby process. And because I asked about the sightings and stuff, he said, oh, we respect the World Rugby process and we're sure they'll come to the right conclusion. Correct response. But Nick Heath then picked him up on it and said, so you're saying you respect the World Rugby process, but a few days ago, your director of rugby did over an hour load of questions. What? How do you marry the two things together? And he fudged the response completely, just straight batted it and changed the subject and answered a different question. But there's not a hint of contrition, is what I think what I'm saying.
Don't apologise. Don't explain. Move on.
they will move on into the independent disciplinary review that will be going on.
What you can say is it's added massive amounts of edge. The crowd this weekend, if there had been able to be one, would be fever pitch.
Yes. It does. The tour has been ludicrous for so many reasons, but this just adds an extra bit of craziness, insanity to the whole thing.
Yeah.
It will be a remarkable last test match. For whatever, even if neither team makes a single meter going forward with ball in hand or passes the ball a single time, it will still be an unbelievable spectacle.
Yeah, it will. Go on.
Can we just talk about the two Colby?
Yeah, go on.
Decisions, because those were the two, the Marrow and the Mako, and even the Faf. I thought the Faf was pretty reckless, but I don't think from the angles I've seen he made.
I don't think it was head high, no.
Yeah, so it was a no arms tackle, and it probably deserved more looking at than it did get, but it probably wasn't a red card offence. So
yeah, agreed.
But the two Cheslin Colby ones, both of those. So the head on head clash with Tom Curry. So one of the things I always say is I want consistency. I want to look at an incident and know immediately, because I've seen previous incidents that look like that, what it is, whether it's a penalty, yellow, red, blah, blah, blah. I don't really care. I'd prefer there to be fewer reds, but I'm not that fussed. Now, that head-on-head incident, in the past, I would have thought that's a rugby incident, to use your phrase, Tim.
Yep.
There have been four incidents that I can remember in the Premiership where that has been a red card. So there are two with Charlie Yules. There was one with Matt Banahan and one with Ollie Thorley that I can remember. And all of them got consistently treated as a red card because for whatever reason, it's contact with the head, bad tackle position, all the rest of it. This Colby on Tom Curry was the same as those four incidents, and it got nothing. And then, and that's probably the less egregious one because kind of in my mind, I historically expected that to be a rugby incident, but now I'm like conditioned for it not to be. The other one, they're taking Conor Murray in the air, that is a red card. I've seen that dozens of times. And that is a red card offence. He's taken in the air. He's not in a realistic position to catch the ball. Conor Murray is taken from height, lands on his head, neck area. It is a red card. How you can get to the decision that they got to, and Ben O'Keefe's actual words in the deliberation to the TMO, who did not contest, was that he lands on his back after seeing the slow motion footage half a dozen times. I just cannot get my head around how that is not, how they get it so wrong, how the decision-making process, which is clear and precise in line with rugby guidelines, can get it so wrong.
I am sympathetic to Cheslin Colby on that one because he was watching the ball the entire time and Conor Murray did kind of jump sideways to catch the ball. That said, I'm not disagreeing with you. I think, but exactly as you say, if you'd shown that, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if you'd shown that, you might have gone, "Oh, it might be a pen, might be,
yeah,
and
yeah,
then might be
yeah.
a yellow, might be a yellow card." Oh, he was looking at the ball. That's okay, but in terms of consistency and in terms of how it appears in the context of all other decisions that are like it, it is a no-brainer red card.
Yeah, and I don't actually think even if you could have given Cheslin Colby two red cards, I don't think it changes the outcome of this game.
No, I agree.
South Africa still win this game because of how well they shut the lines down, how well they played, how brilliantly they took their two tries, actually, which we've not talked about, and not enough talk anywhere has been given to how sensationally finished, how they identified the space on those two kicks, yeah. kicks through, crossfield kick and kick through, and yeah. executed perfectly. South Africa deserve all the credit, and they would have won regardless of Cheslin Colby having two red cards. But it's just frustrating because World Rugby talk about like consistency and having the approach. Even if you ignore the player welfare side of things, which obviously is important, but just the consistent approach so people understand what is going on from a decision making position to have those two decisions basically ignore the history, ignore the guidelines. It's just galling.
I mean, if that was the benchmark now, I actually wouldn't be unhappy. But
I'm kind of easy. Set the benchmark however you want to set the benchmark. Yeah. Just from my perspective, watching the game, I just want consistency. If that is how it's going to be dealt with, nothing and a yellow card, fine, I guess. I'd probably disagree with it, but then I'd just, right, so every time that happens, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, very frustrating from my side.
So there's two team announcements tomorrow at midday. South Africa they have Dwayne Vermaelen available. I think they're going to chuck him straight in.
I would.
I think they will as well. Especially they might be losing Peter Steff to Toy as well,
and potentially Faf de Klerk.
Yes.
And what? Any back row with Peter Steff to Toy and Vermaelen, even though he's advancing in age, it gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, it's terrifying, isn't it? Those two.
Aren't they?
And the way that Moster played 20 plus minutes in the back row, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's amazing, Moster. I really think he's amazing.
Yeah, he's class. But having someone like him, because he's, in weight terms, he's more similar to Itoji or Laws than he is to Etzebeth or Lude. But having someone with his ability and then being able to bring Lude off the bench is just, outrageous.
Wait. How about you do this, right? Oh, no, because Khaleesi's the captain, so he's got to play.
Khaleesi has to play, yeah.
Going to go Lude and Etzebeth with Mostar in the back row with the other two. Oh.
Well, if they can't play Peter Steph to Toy, they may well start like that.
They could do, yeah.
Dan Dupree has been recalled to the squad.
Mm. He's brutal. Yep. Do you know what? This is the sort of game that would suit a Dupree brother. I really think it is. And there's no passing involved. There's no, there's very little catching. And you just need someone to monster the men. This would be perfect for Jean-Louis Dupree or Dan Dupree.
Yeah.
Get both of them in there.
So I don't expect South Africa to change, aside from Vermeulen, I don't expect them to change anything unless they have to, but they have options in the positions if they have to change them. The Lions, there's a lot of debate that there might be quite a lot of changes. I don't think there will be, but what would you do?
Dewan can go, everyone else stays the same.
I could get on board with that. I think Wyn Jones, if he's fit, will come in.
Yeah, Rory Sutherland. I think Rory Sutherland and Ken Owens are going to get dropped.
Ken Owens was good in the second half of the first test.
Yeah, he was not good when he came on at the weekend by his high standards. And the scrum got battered and the line out messed up in the second half.
Yeah. Mm. Now, I'm probably with Jay. I wouldn't change. I definitely would not have Duan. I know I bang on about this every week, but he is so good in one dimension. He's just terrible at everything else because he's never had to be good at anything else.
Yeah.
He is so good, such an explosive, strong, fast runner, but then is just a liability in every other dimension that you couldn't
even. I don't think he's so terrible now. My battery is down to 5% and I'm without a charger.
Tell us what you do. Tell us who you change.
Dewan and that's it. And I put Dewan on the bench. But if Dewan starts, I'm not overly bothered.
Okay, I'd go Josh Adams and Liam Williams into the back three. I don't think Stuart Hogg's been playing well. He was bad on. He was bad under the high ball, yeah. and Ian Dew. So I'd take out him and him. I'd take out Chris Harris and I'd have Owen Farrell in the centre potentially. I might even think about Farrell at 10, but actually, no, I'm going to go Farrell at 12. So I'm taking out three Scots and I'm dropping Rory Sutherland from the bench. Oh, so sorry, Scotland. Wyn Jones comes in and I'd probably flip Laws and Tyge Byrne. I love Courtney Laws and I want him there. But I think the extra little bit of X factor, if you need a big turnover that could win you 3 points, or you need someone that can offload someone else into a little bit of space where a tiny bit of space exists, I think Tyge Byrne can do that.
So the only of your things I'd question, I think I'd be fine if that is the team. The only other question is the Hogg decision, because Hogg didn't have a good game, but do the form is temporary, class is permanent thing. He's done enough to suggest that he could come back in the third test and have a storm.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. I probably would keep Hogg. I'd put Liam Williams in there.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
The big thing for me, though, would be it's not necessarily the personnel, it's the way that they're playing. And it's that intent to speed up the game, intent to play. Like one of the very, very few times where they tried going wide from set piece, they got some good change, some lovely hands with Bigger, Henshaw, Chris Harris. And then it did actually stop a little bit on Stuart Hogg because of the South African rush defence. But that's what I do. I'd want to keep the ball in hand a bit more, KBA, and up the tempo, and make South Africa move them around the park. Don't just allow them to play the game that they want to play.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Before I go, anyone notice that we've lost an international coach from rugby? Someone's been fired?
No, who's that?
Jamie Cudmore got fired.
Oh, so I saw this. I've not followed the story. What
quickly, before your phone dies, tell us, Jay.
So Jamie Cudmore got fired because he tweeted, "You can't decolonize ninth." When the Lady Sevens team finished ninth in the Olympics, which is ill-considered, and that got him fired.
I don't understand. I'm sorry. You're going to have to explain this to me. You can't decolonize ninth. I don't get it. Yeah. What?
So prior to the Olympics, there's been some furore around the women's game in Canada. Don't quite understand exactly what's gone on, but there's accusations against the old coach, and I don't know if those have been resolved yet. Also, you know, the women's team hasn't had enough support because they're based all around Canada. Canada's a big country. And there's also other things like they're talking about decolonization of this and the other. So, you know, they seem to put lots of different threads. If it's just one thing, you're right, that needs to be sorted. But Jamie Cudmore, when they came ninth, said, it looks like you can't decolonize ninth. And anyway, he lost his job for that. There's three ways to punish someone in our system. You lock them up, you fine them, you take their property off them, or you prevent them from working. And it's such a serious thing. People sort of forget this. They think it's just so casual now. We treat it with, such, it's just so trivial. And it just shows that, it doesn't really matter who you are, what you do, how valuable your experience is. If you don't hold the exact opinions which other people want you to hold, you will go.
Unless you're the president of of Canada, and then you can multiple times do blackface and no bother.
Oh, yeah, but that's okay because he's a good guy, right? And it's so sinister. So, obviously, your political stance is more important than your rugby knowledge in Canada. But here's the hilarious thing. The ladies released a statement after this, saying that they were really proud about what the team has developed into and become. Well, they shouldn't be, because they finished ninth.
The measure of success should be, effort is part of it. Did you do all that you could do? Did you push yourself to the limits of your own ability? And if you did and that's ninth, then you can feel happy about that. I'm not saying you should necessarily be lauded, because that's not the point of the Olympics.
Yeah. I don't think it's wise to be praising people who are not doing particularly well in sport as heroes in sport. They're there to win.
Did he really see any of the sevens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
Boys, I'm going to have to shoot. I'm on 1% battery.
All right. In a bit, Jay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Jay.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it, actually. It was good. I like the weightlifting. That's on at the minute. And the gymnastics and stuff is cool.
Did you see Lee Wen-Wen?
Yes.
She was called, who won the women's weightlifting. Women's 87 kg plus weight.
180 kg clean and jerk.
Did you see how much she weighed?
No.
So I obviously looked this up. So she is...
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Well, how tall is she?
So she's 5'10".
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, she's tall. Oh, my God. Whoa, okay. I will go 115 kgs, then.
115. So I'll give you a comparison. So a tight head prop, Taniela Tupu, who is also 5'10", he weighs 135 kgs. And he is enormous. He is absolutely enormous. One of the biggest tight head props in the international game. Lee Wenwen is 5'10" and listed as 150 kg. So 2 stone heavier than Taniela Tupu. That is remarkable.
Wow. And that's probably a very accurate weight, because they have to be weighed in for weight classes and categories and stuff. They'll have to have been officially weighed in before competition.
Now that is, admittedly, that is from her Wikipedia page.
Okay.
But
nevertheless, that's fine. It, wow.
It is, and she was incredible. I mean, she destroyed the field, absolutely destroyed the field with incredible explosive power and form. It was remarkable to watch. But yeah, she could be packing down tight end for Australia based on that.
Well, if China won an anchor for a scrum, oh, because she could do some serious damage. They could do, I mean, China could take the women's game back to the men's game circa 2005.
Yeah.
If they wanted.
Yeah.
When it was just all about the tight head prop destroying people. Yes. Yeah. Do it. Yeah. Come on, China.
I loved that. And then we're now getting into athletics, which I do really enjoy.
I know.
For whatever reason, I can't get as on board with swimming.
I mean, people, that guy, what was his name? The guy that's won all the medals.
Adam Peaty.
Yeah, and he's the most, he's had the most medals of any British athlete in Olympic Games, which I kind of go, oh no, it's not Adam Peaty, it's the other one that's now got 6 medals in total from relays and different distances and over. Okay. Anyway, whatever his name is. And there's a bit where they were saying that, and I was going, yeah, obviously he's an incredible swimmer, but if you're really good at 200 meters backstroke or whatever it is, you're probably quite good at 100 meter backstroke, and you can also take part in a relay. So am I as impressed with that as Chris Hoy over multiple Olympics and Steve Redgrave over 5 consecutive Olympics in one event?
Yeah, the Redgrave and Hoy is just, and they are such brutal sports as well in terms of, like, you have to push your body to the apps. I mean, in all of these, you do.
Yeah, you do. Oh, I'm not trying to take anything away from him. He's amazing, but trying to sort of go, well, he's had two. I just, for that reason, I'm slightly cynical of the swimming, in the sense that, like, someone having 7 gold medals, like when Phelps or what, Ian Thorpe or whatever.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, incredibly impressive, and they're amazing, but it's no. When you've done 3 Olympics in a row, then you can start to compare yourself with Hoy or Redgrave or Pinson or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I'm down with that, definitely. Redgrave, the footage of them going, like Redgrave going for his final one, is just, it's unbelievable.
Oh, that documentary, it's on YouTube actually, Going for Gold. It's he passes out on a rowing machine. He's self-medicating diabetic whilst... Yeah. In the most brutal endurance sport in the Olympics. Well, yeah. One of the most brutal endurance sports. Just returning to the rugby. So where are we at? We Wyn Jones would come into the squad, either starting or on the bench at Loosehead. Yeah. Possibly Ken Owens for Jamie George on the bench might get swapped.
Yeah, I could see that. And that would actually play a bit more into what I want, which is more ball in play time, more movement of the ball.
Yeah.
KBA keep South Africa moving around rather than this game that they tried to play.
If Kyle Sinclair pleads guilty or is found guilty, then I think Tiger Furlong might have to do a 70-minute shift at tight head prop, because I think Xander Fagerson is a big drop off.
Yeah, Xander Fagerson is talented, but he's not yet at the level that Furlong is.
Yeah. So it's, oh yeah, go on.
Did you notice, so early on in the game, when it was actually when Duane van der Merwe put in the tip tackle, arguable tip tackle on Peter Steph de Toy in the corner.
I'd say late tackle, not tip tackle, because it wasn't a tip tackle. He landed flat.
Yeah, it's been called a tip tackle, but yeah, I don't think it was really an issue, that tackle. Did you notice who was one of 2 or 3 players making, because the ball then went out to Chesson Colby, and one of the players making the tackle on Chesson Colby in the corner was Ty Furlong, who'd got all the way out there. So
fair play.
He struggled in a couple of scrums, but he's such a good player.
Yeah,
he's such an engine for such a big boy.
Yeah, I think the pack will probably stay pretty much the same. Maybe, like I say, Burn for Laws, potentially. Well, that's what I would do anyway. I don't know what Warren Gatland will do.
I mean, he has got the option to freshen up the team a little bit in a few positions by doing something like that, where the drop-off is not enormous.
Yeah, in terms of freshening up the team, I don't think it'll be necessary in terms of physical and stuff. So I spoke to Jamie Roberts today on the Lions Daily Show, and he said, because I said, you know what it's like to to win a first test in 2013. The Lions won the first test, could have wrapped up the series, but lost the second test. I said, how did you feel on that Monday morning? You know, I was trying to go to today, how will the players be feeling? And he went, well, I remember that Monday morning. I how I felt was hungover. Warren Gatland said to them on the Saturday, this is in 2013, Warren Gatland said to them after they lost the second test, I'll see you on Wednesday, boys.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He gave them 4 days off. Three and a half days off.
I quite like it because you're not going to... It's one of these things where like you can only absorb so much coaching in any given period of time or so much fitness, and past a point, it will just be like law of diminishing returns or even actually be counterproductive. So I think it'll be interesting to see what they do now, whether they have several days, whether they have 1, 2, 3, 4 days off before performing again, and then turning up knowing you have to perform again.
Yeah.
One more shot at this.
And that was kind of Jamie Roberts' point. He said that they're emotionally going to have to they're going to have to emotionally peak, and that will be possibly where the game is won and lost, is if the mindset is in the right place. Because you've got to, as we've seen from the last two weekends, you've got to win that physical battle when you play in South Africa first and foremost, and then do the rest of the stuff off it. But he said if you let your mind wander there too early in the week, you'll be mentally exhausted and not in the right place. So just, yeah, he seemed to think they'll just be chilling out. Right now, they'll just be hanging out, playing golf, walking around, sitting by the pool, whatever.
Playing some Call of Duty, making some flat whites for the boys.
Exactly. But we'll see. I think the back line's where potential changes could be. So if you wanted to speed it up, do you go Ali Price back at nine?
I think either of them can do it. Probably Ali Price is slightly better because he offers that running threat to keep the defensive line a bit more honest. I probably would bring in, as you mentioned before, I'd probably push Henshaw to 13 and bring in Faz as a 12, just to get that second playmaker.
Yeah, and I think it would be easy to go, oh, Bigger only passed three times. He needs to go if they want to play differently. But the fact he only passed three times, I mean, he plays club rugby for Northampton where they let the boys play. He can do that. It's just clearly that wasn't what they set out to do.
Correct, yeah. All of these boys can play whatever strategy you want. It's just the strategy, and easy with hindsight, had Gatland won, we would have been calling him a genius. And we would have been calling Razzy Erasmus
a clown,
totally out of touch and a clown. The Victor Wright history. So Bigger can play however you want him to play. He just shouldn't be playing the same way as he did last time in another test match like that against South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, we'll see what the teams are and then we'll go from there, mate. Right. What are you doing on your time in Wales?
A bit of walking, hopefully a cycle tomorrow.
Children in papooses and on bike seats or what? Or is this?
Yeah. I've not taken the Thomas's bike seat, so I'll be hopefully getting an hour to myself on the bike at some point tomorrow.
Nice.
But yeah, carrying two children around all over North Wales.
Lovely job.
trying to keep them alive for a week, basically.
Right, nice one, Phil.
Cheers, Tim. I will see you later.
In a bit. And then there was one just for me to say thank you very much for listening. You can find us patreon.com/eggchasers, and we humbly appreciate the support, which allowed us to get some proper sound engineering and stuff on the live show we did last weekend. And more of those going to be coming soon. We'll have a Q&A podcast very soon and another shirt giveaway for Patreons as well. So get your questions and stuff in. Email contacteggchasers@gmail.com. You can find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. I'll let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.